Hey, this is Tiffany Thiessen, and you're listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
I got to apologize up front for Kalai King. He does the theme song, and he gets a little gassy when we're having drinks before the show, so I'm going to apologize for him. I'm Dan Dunn. Welcome to What We're Drinking, and what we're drinking today is the Negroni, and there are two reasons for this. I'll tell you the second one shortly, but reason number one is we have a guest in studio. She is a brand ambassador from Mulholland Distilling. It's right here in Los Angeles, California. I want to welcome back to the show the lovely and talented. Should we do a... Cecilia Betzel.
Hey!
Hey-o, hey-o, hey-o. Hum.
Hey-o. What's up?
Hi, how are you?
Good, good.
It's good to see you. Thanks for coming back on the show, and thank you for bringing along some alcohol. You brought some Mulholland with you.
I sure did.
We are going to get to that in just a second. I want to tell you, you know, the big show we got going on here, we're celebrating today. It's right around this time is the 4-year anniversary of the release of one of the most important books of the 21st century. It's a book that someone who wrote for some site called FanBalt called An Absolute Blast to Read. And I couldn't agree more. The book's called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, The Seven Secrets of Awakening the Highly Effective 4-Hour Giant Today. I know it's good because I co-wrote it along with a gentleman by the name of Scott Alexander. We wrote the book as in character, as the characters from the show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Is an officially licensed book by the show, by FX. They hired us to do it. We're going to talk a little bit about 4-year anniversary. And in honor of that, I'm going to be playing some snippets from an interview I did with Rob McElhenney, Glenn Howerton, and Caitlin Olson from the cast of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Yeah, it was from an interview that we did back a couple years ago when the book came out. I tried to get the guys to come back on to the show now, but they don't return my phone calls anymore. So can we get a toast over here? Cecilia, let's raise up the glass.
Yeah.
Raise it up. Raise it up. Here we raise it. Oh, by the way, as I'm raising it up, I'm getting a whiff of myself.
Oh, great.
I am. Yeah. No, but it smells good
Farting,
for one. No, it actually smells good for once. Usually I don't smell that great. I got this new soap. New soap. Let me explain how things work with me. I get products, right? People send me alcohol. It's almost always alcohol. They want me to sample it, to either talk about it on the show or write about it. But every once in a while, I get like weird things that don't really have anything to do with alcohol. So I got this soap. It's called the Duke Cannon Supply Company, and they sent me a whole bunch of soap. And it's kind of, it's cool looking. It's these old bricks like they used to give out to the military back in the old wars.
Yes,
like
I remember.
You fought in Korea, didn't you? Yeah.
No.
So like that. And they're not a sponsor of this show. I'm not financially obligated to speak to this, but they did give me this thing. I think it was called the Duke Cannon Supply Drop. Okay. And I'm looking at it right now, and it's a $50 thing. And it comes free. You got the soap, you got cologne. They call it the big ass brick of soap. And I got there's this exfoliating shower soap. Just a bunch of cool stuff. Anyway, Duke Cannon, thank you for sending me the soap. And thank
it does
you.
Smell quite.
Don't
nice.
I smell pretty good? Right? Yeah.
It's like what is that?
It's pretty nice.
What
yeah.
That smell.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Oh, look, the dogs are barking. That's how good I smell. You hear them out there? They're going crazy. Yeah, they're going crazy for me.
I think it's a good. Good Christmas present idea.
So
to get it for my
Cecilia
daughters.
Betzel, you brought some. You work for Mulholland Distilling. Can you tell us a little bit about Mulholland?
Yeah, so I've been around for just about 3 years. We're going to go celebrate the anniversary next week. We make gin, vodka, and American whiskey, and it's all fan-fucking-tastic.
And I should tell everybody out there, because if you look it up, you're going to find it out anyway. One of the co-owners of the brand is the phenomenal actor Walton Goggins. Walton, of course, from The Shield and Justified. He now stars in The Unicorn on CBS. He and a good buddy of his named Matt Alper started the brand, and they are just blowing it up, man. It's
great. We just got picked up at BevMo, which if you're in California, you've definitely seen. You can get it at Whole Foods, Bristol Farms. It's all over the place these days. But the...
Sorry, I just shot you with a laser.
But the gin is what I drink most frequently. And so I brought that, especially since, you know, it makes a mean Negroni. But it's cool because it's a little bit different than your standard gins. I get a lot of people saying that, you know, oh, I don't drink gin, or gin makes me crazy. I hear that a lot. Wonder what that is.
Well, you seem a little crazy.
Yeah, it's
I'm worried
nature.
About you when you walked into the studio. And I mentioned earlier that there were two reasons, and obviously Cecilia's here with the gin. She's doing it. She brought it on. And we're going to talk about this drink, which you made. But here's the thing. She made this Negroni. Tell us the components of the Negroni, what you put in there.
It's a super easy cocktail. It's an old sort of bartender's kind of drink. It's equal parts gin, sweet vermouth, and Campari. So it goes a beautiful red color. And our gin is a little lighter on the juniper than most gins. So it's going to get a little more cucumber, lavender, lime. So it just gives the Negroni kind of a nice little fruity sweetness as opposed to it being too bitter.
It's delicious. I'm going to tell you that right now. Mm. And Cece did, we call her Cece. Cece did something different in the preparation of this drink. After she finished it, normally you would stir it with a spoon, but she stirred it with her finger. And the reason she did that
is... I washed my hands, I swear.
She did wash her hands, but the reason she did that is a tribute to an old friend of mine who just passed away today. I don't know when you're going to be listening to this show, but he passed away yesterday, actually Friday the 15th of November, by the name of Gary Regan, also went by Gaz Regan. And Gaz, among the many things, is a legendary guy in the bar community. And one of the many things he did, he became very famous for... one time he had to make a whole bunch of Negronis at once. He couldn't find his spoon, and so he stirred the drinks with his finger, and it became a thing. I mean, it became a thing. Like, it was written about in the New York Times and all sorts of places. A lot of tributes have come into Gary. As I said, he died on the 15th, Friday. He died of pneumonia. His wife sent a message saying he died peacefully, that you believed his soul lived on. I believe that too. Gary was from Lancashire, England. Lancashire? Am I saying that right?
Yeah. Lancashire?
Yeah. Born in 1951. He moved to New York City in 1973, and that's when his storied career began. He wrote a bunch of books, including The Bartender's Bible, The Book of Bourbon, New Classic Cocktails, The Martini Companion, and of course, the one that I love the most, the Negroni, Drinking to La Dolce Vita, is a book that Gary wrote. He knew everything there was to know about the Negroni and then some. But he really was someone, I know this, the term, you know, like terms like rock star and all that get thrown around all too frequently. But in the case of Gaz Regan, it was true. And I think without guys like him, there's no show like that, like this. I mean, so... depending on you, how you feel about the show, you have Gaz to blame or thank for this. So, Gary, I'm going to raise one up to you, buddy. Here we go. Yeah. Here we go.
Gaza.
To wherever, whatever bar he's hunkered up to now, somewhere out in the ether. Love you, man. Mm. So in his book, The Negroni, Drinking to La Dolce Vita, Gary credited the creation of this delectable aperitivo to a nobleman from Florence by the name of Count Camillo Negroni. Hence the
Count
name.
Negroni.
Count Negroni, who in 1919 demanded that his local bartender whip up an Americano that had a little more kick to it. Apparently, the Count, who had spent time in the States wrangling rodeo bulls, among many things, he was not a man to be trifled with, okay?
What so, a guy.
A bartender by the name of Fosco Scarselli swapped in gin for club soda to deliver the added oomph that Count Negroni desired in his Americano. In so doing, Scarselli bequeathed us with a drink for the ages. And it's a simple one to make, as Cecilia pointed out, and even simpler to sip, especially out in like in the afternoon sun, right?
Oh, that's so great. And it's very much coming back into style. We had recently in LA Negroni Week.
Yeah, Negroni Week. Well, Negroni Week happens all over the place. I think it's the only cocktail that has its own week. And as Cece said, you put it in, you stir it. A lot of times it's made with London Dry Gin, but as we mentioned, doing it with Mulholland, I think, adds a different flavor component that I really love. And so we're clear, though, you never shake a Negroni. And also remember, the orange twist garnish is a sacred and essential component.
And a little finger dirt, you know.
And a little finger dirt. If you're tempted by lemons, though, resist. It's the orange
twist. Well, a lot of places, too, put in an olive.
Well, those places should be out of business. That's what I say.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
You know what, Cecilia? If somebody were to put in an olive in my Negroni, I would go... I'd gong them. It'd be the gong show. They get the gong show treatment. Okay. So we've covered the Negroni. We've covered Mulholland. You also have a whiskey and a vodka as well, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you guys are
American whiskey and vodka. Can only find it in California at the moment, but coming very soon to several other states.
Yeah. You're getting there. You're doing it. So, like I said at the top of the show, it is the four-year anniversary of the release of the Sonny book. And as I said, we wrote it in character. I'll read you a tiny little bit from the back of the book, and this is from Mac. Rob McElhenney's character, Mac, says...
He's my favorite.
Yeah, he's your favorite. Me and my friends wrote this book to help people. It's who we are. We're givers. Some of you may be wondering what makes people like us qualified to write a self-help book. I'd like nothing more than to get into all that. But as it turns out, there's some litigation pending at the moment, and on the advice of Charlie's Uncle Jack, I'm not at liberty to talk about certain matters related to how this book came to be. Needless to say, though, we are totally somebodies, and we are totally qualified to be book writers and world-renowned fixers of other people's broken, pathetic lives. So that's kind of how it goes. We broke it down into different chapters. We got relationships, financial success, and career, fashion and personal grooming,
ooh,
health and diet, and survival skills. So some of the little, and as I said, it's written from the perspective of Frank, Sweet D, Dennis, Charlie, and Mac. And there's a lot of good stuff, like one from Dennis called I Beat Marriage and So Can You. There's one from Mac called Here's How Straight I Am. This was when Mac was still in the closet. A Man and His Horse, the story of Peter Nincompoop. Fans of the show will remember Peter Nincompoop from Charlie. Of course, there's a couple of things on The Nightman. We did one. Who wrote this one? America, Love It or Sleeve It? Mac, he never wears sleeves. There's How to Look Like a Giant Bird. We have recipes in there.
What kind of articles did Frank write?
Frank wrote Recipe Corner, Rum Ham.
Rum Ham.
Yes.
That's such a good episode.
Yes. There was How to Stage an Intervention, Spiritual Nutrition. Oh, another one from Frank is also Recipe Corner, Raccoon Steak.
Oh,
I don't know if you remember the raccoon steak. When the bums come for us, is this heaven? What's everyone's problem today? And it's wrong to poison people. That's one of the chapters. So again, the seven secrets of awakening the highly effective four-hour giant today. The gang writes a self-help book. It's still available everywhere. I don't care if you buy it because I don't get any money for it. I got paid like one lump sum, so I don't care. But it is a bestseller. It did do really well.
More good Christmas gifts.
That's right. It's a good Christmas gift. Speaking of Christmas gifts, you queued it up for me. Normally, we do a thing at the top of the show where we do new products. I tell you about new stuff. We are going to do that on the show. We're going to do it after we run these Sonny interviews. I'm going to tell you about a couple of whiskeys and a couple of wines. Because it's that time of year, right? You got to have gifts. You buy stuff for people, right?
I have already bought almost all of my Christmas gifts.
Well, not all of them. So maybe you can pick up maybe you can take one of my recommendations to the bank. Impress your friends. Okay. So as I said, I did this interview with Glenn and Rob, and Caitlin came in at the end. So it's mostly Glenn and Rob, what we're going to hear. I'm just going to run some snippets. This was right around the time the book came out. And wait,
so Glenn is Dennis.
Glenn Howerton plays Dennis. Rob McElhenney plays Mac. And Caitlin Olson, who is also Rob's wife, plays Dee. So let's get to it. The first one we're going to do... How about like Philly accents? You know, I'm from Philly. Can you tell?
You know, every once in a while it sort of comes out, but I go to Philly a lot and the accents are pretty intense. Hame.
Well, were drinking, we were at a party and we did this interview at the Sky Bar, the Mondrian Hotel, very shishy on Sunset Boulevard. And there was kind of a raging party going on at the time that we did this. And in fact, you know what? We'll go with this other clip first because of the raging party, we had a security guy that was assigned to watch us while we were doing the show and keep drunk people away from us. He was not doing a good job. What he was doing a good job of is macking on women the entire time we were there. So we somehow got on the topic of the show Entourage, the show that used to be on HBO, because we were talking about how Rob and Glenn, they all hung out, they were all friends, and it was kind of like an Entourage sort of situation, but maybe in reverse. So we got to talking about that, and here's a little snippet of that. Who was was it you? It's funny you said that. I just read an interview, and I think it was Glenn, and you were talking about the show Sunny and how you guys always end up getting screwed in the end, and that in Entourage, the problem with Entourage was at the end of the show, they were total dicks, and then they would all be standing on the balcony looking out going, everything's fucking great for us, man.
Well, I don't know that I said that. Well, no, I don't know that I said that that was the problem with the show, but that is the difference between our show and... Someone's trying to talk to me. Right?
I love when people come up and they're like, yeah. We're just in the middle of doing a show.
That is the difference between our show and Entourage, though, is that at the end of the show, we are not standing on a balcony overlooking Hollywood.
By the way,
I
don't mean to interrupt you, but we do have a security guy here who's in constant conversation with this chick over here.
I know. He's not doing his job.
Meanwhile, we're getting accosted during the show. It's good to see. Good to see it happening.
It just goes to show how far we've come, Rob, that we're being accosted by women left and right, and security can't even keep them at bay. That's
it does.
That's
it why does
we're
happening.
At. So
it
has. Scene, there's been one person who came up confused. I think she was asking for directions.
Right.
And our security guy is picking up digits.
Yeah.
And then we said we're doing a radio show, and I think she said, fuck off.
No, don't do that. Look.
Oh, I'm sorry. They can't see.
Our characters are about as far removed from the characters on Entourage as they could possibly be. However, us, our real lives.
You like them.
We're becoming them.
You're becoming them.
Well,
yeah.
If we weren't married and had kids, then we would be them, yeah. I think, probably, at this point. Don't you think?
Which one would I be?
Well, you'd be Johnny Drama. I'd be Vinny Chase. If we'd never created the show, I would be the movie star by now, and you would be sort of latching onto me.
Who's Turtle?
I'd be on your cook.
Who's Turtle? DeVito?
It's Charlie, right?
Charlie Turtle?
No, Charlie's... we would probably be hanging out at Charlie's giant mansion, I think, at this point, right?
So then we kept going. The party that we were at was for a vodka... Did I already say this? American Harvest... Mm-hmm. I don't think it's around anymore. Maybe we destroyed it by being there that night. But we were drinking American Harvest vodka. If it is still around, I apologize to the folks at American Harvest. I'm sure it's delicious. It's no Mulholland. I'll say that right up front. It's no Mulholland.
Is.
What is, right? So we're drinking this American Harvest, and Rob started bagging on me for my Philly accent, the way I say vodka. Is that weird? Vodka?
Vodka?
You do not talk like that. So Rob got giving me shit, and here's Rob giving me shit about my Philly accent. He's from Philly, too, by the way. I went to a very blue-collar high school called Father Judge. He went to a very shishy high school called St. Joe's Prep.
St.
Joe's Preparatory School. So maybe that was what it was. But here we are. He's giving me shit about my accent.
That your accent...
My accent?
Yes.
I have an accent?
You have a slight accent.
What are you talking about?
It hinders your ability to say the word vodka.
Vodka?
I say more like a vodka.
Oh, vodka. Slovakia.
One of the
you're full of shit. Well,
American Harvey Spocky.
Hey, I didn't go to St. Joe's Prep.
I don't know why Rob doesn't have more of a Philadelphia accent. And the thing is he's not
a professional.
He's not even that good at doing the accent. I can do it almost as well as an accent.
But in my defense,
you fucking grew up there. I can do a Montgomery, Alabama accent.
I can do the accent. I can do the accent. I'm just not a talking. I'm not a dancing monkey for you,
Rob. What are the name of the mountains near Philadelphia where we used to go?
Poconos.
Poconos, yeah.
Yo, hon, let's go to the Poconos. Yo, you guys go to the Poconos? That's the accent.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Bravo.
You just can't believe that people speak like that, but they do.
I was thunderstruck for about the first four or five seasons. Now I get it. But it sounds like a combination of like Australian, Southern, and New York. That's what it sounds like to me. Yeah, Philly accent.
The Australian does. There's been times when I've been very drunk.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to people, and they'll say, "Are you from Australia?"
Yeah.
Did you ever get that, Rob?
Never.
Yeah, I used to get people say, "Are you from Australia?"
It sounds vaguely Australian.
I worked very hard to get rid of my accent.
Did you really? You worked hard?
Well, I just stopped doing it.
I
moved to New York City, and I decided I was not going to speak like that anymore, and so I don't.
There was one word that I worked on not... There was one...
Water.
When I moved to Colorado, I was really embarrassed whenever I would order water.
Yeah.
Because I would say water.
Because it sounds weird as shit.
Water.
By the way, my mom is from Mississippi, and she didn't say water the way you guys say it, but she says warder.
Warder.
It's just not entirely dissimilar to what you guys do, which is, I think, part of the reason why it sounds Southern to me.
Yeah. Well, it's embarrassing. I got over that. Rob apparently thinks I still have an accent.
I hear it a little bit, yeah.
Vodka.
It's there.
All right, let's talk about the vodka.
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 I don't say it like that. I really don't. I say vodka.
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 I used to say vodka.
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 But I've been in America too long. Vodka.
You used to say it like a Russian person? Vodka.
Vodka.
Vodka. They don't say V's, do they? Say W's, right?
Yeah.
Isn't vodka vodka? Vodka.
I don't know. In Sweden, there is no W, really.
I'm going to be murdered by an angry Russian guy later. You're making fun of our language. I must...
Vodka.
I must kill you. What did I...
What was that? That was a terrible Russian accent.
It was not.
Jesus.
I'm quite the
Stick
actor.
Stick to the water.
I'm quite the actor. And speaking of quite the actor, Glenn then told us at one point in the interview that he has a massive man crush on Kurt Russell. I know Kurt, and I think we were talking about Kurt having been on my old show, and... Glenn revealed that he's got it bad for Kurt Russell.
Awesome. Yeah, but I couldn't fucking care less about anybody but Kurt Russell, really.
But Kurt Russell?
Mean, I think that he is one of the most underrated actors of all time. I am such a huge fan of his.
He's fantastic. And
I love that dude.
A really nice fucking guy.
I'd be more excited to meet him than almost any other.
He's pretty radical.
Yeah.
I can hook it
What's
up for
him. What's he doing?
He's one of those guys that, like, I love him so much I don't ever want to meet him, I don't think.
Really?
No, not unless I actually have the opportunity to really get to know him. I don't want to just brush by him. It'll be a disappointment.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Let him keep his place in your heart.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it's like you never meet your idols kind of a thing because, like, I don't know, man. I mean, him is Wyatt Earp just...
Well, Snake Plissken. So he didn't meet. He's never met Kurt. He never wants to meet Kurt. Doesn't want to ruin
it. What about you, Dan? What would be the person that you... sort of would be the most excited or starstruck to meet?
Bono.
Oh, yeah.
Bono.
Dan is a huge Bono. U2 fan. How many times have you gone to see U2 in concert, Dan?
50. 50.
And how old are you?
Very old. Many years ago, I went to a screening at the Sundance Film Festival of a movie called Leonard Cohen, I'm Not Your Man. It was a documentary, and U2 produced it. And it was in a little screening room, middle of the afternoon. It was maybe me and about five other people in there. And the movie ended and everybody walks out and there's a guy standing there by himself and it's The Edge from U2. And to this point, I'd seen him about 35 times. And, you know, I don't get starstruck easily, but I was definitely starstruck. And I went up to The Edge and I said, excuse me, Edge. I said, I started like getting all Kathy Bates and Misery on him. I said, I'm like your biggest fan. I said, I've seen you guys 35 times, and without missing a beat, The Edge said, "Thanks for the money." That was that.
Oh, that's good.
Speaking of other, Glenn had another brush with fame. He's probably a lot of brushes with fame, but another person he could have met that he almost didn't was the author, late great author, Ray Bradbury.
Oh, he's one of my favorites.
One of your favorites.
Marsh Chronicles.
Turns out Glenn lived in an apartment where Ray Bradbury lived for a very long time. And so let him tell you.
Have you ever read Something Wicked This Way Comes?
I have not read it. Don't try to show me up. But here's what...
Who's the author here?
Yeah, I know, right? I've written a couple of books, but I don't pay attention to anybody else's stuff. So here's Glenn recounting a story about Ray Bradbury.
And then I moved into that place that you're talking about, early 2007. I lived there for 2 years.
Yeah, you just moved out. I looked at it.
Yeah.
But I was thinking to myself...
You know who else lived there?
Who?
Ray Bradbury.
You told me this, yes. Yeah. Ray Bradbury, the author.
Who just passed.
Just died.
He just passed.
And interestingly enough, Ray Bradbury actually came to the apartment while I was gone. This really bummed me out. While Jill, my now wife, was home and stopped by the apartment and knocked on the door. And Jill answered the Jill. No, actually, it was Ray Bradbury's driver. And Jill answered the door, and the driver said, "Hi, this might sound strange, but I have Ray Bradbury in my car.
And he wants to see the place.
And he lived in this apartment when he was first starting out as a writer and wrote The Martian Chronicles in your apartment and would like to come upstairs." Is that the name of it? The Martian Chronicles?
Yeah. Yeah.
And wanted to just come check it out.
Did he come in?
No. He did.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
He didn't go in.
Did he
because
not go
Jill
in?
Had no idea who the fuck Ray Bradbury was.
She
was like, "I'm not going to let these two old men into my apartment while my husband's gone."
I was trying not
to. And by the way, who the fuck knows if it actually was Ray Bradbury?
it's probably like some maybe, homeless guy.
Yeah, a couple of homeless guys who were looking at it.
So, yeah, that would happen. And then.
What's Ray Bradbury's most famous book?
I don't. Why are you doing this to me right now?
You know. Come on.
The Martian Chronicles.
No.
No. What? The one that became Blade Runner?
No. Close.
What one?
Fahrenheit.
Oh, Fahrenheit 451. There you go.
Quiz time.
Wow. I didn't realize. Well, speaking of quizzes, thanks for teeing that up for me. So we had a couple of drinks by this point, and things started to get a little bit competitive. And so I put a game up. I used to play games. This is my old Sirius show, and we used to do games. So I did a quiz game pitting Rob against Glenn. And let's just say Rob got a little bit competitive and ornery during the course of this game. So here's a little quick bit of that, this game that we did. And it even has its own little theme song to it.
And now we're going to play a game, guys. This is our big popular game on the show. Normally in this game, it's I throw out questions to just one person. Since there are two of you today, you're going to be competing.
Yes.
This is the vicious circle now of for reals or bullshit.
Is that for reals or bullshit? Boosh facts that are so crazy, we couldn't possibly make them up. Or could we? It's time to play for reals or bullshit.
All right, here's what happens, guys. I'm going to throw out a bit of information, and you're going to tell me whether what I just said is for reals or bullshit. You each get three questions. We're going to alternate.
Okay.
At the end of this, the winner will get a gift bag of something.
Oh, we're going to alternate. Okay.
Yeah. Here we go. First question is for Rob McElhenney.
Okay.
Rob McElhenney, are you ready?
Yes.
All right. American Harvest is made from water extracted from deep beneath the Snake River Plain in Idaho. In 1976, famed stuntman Evel Knievel successfully jumped over Snake River Canyon in a contraption called a sky cycle. For reals or bullshit?
For reals.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Rob. That's bullshit.
If you're going to tell me that one part of that is bullshit...
No. There's several
parts.
Is
it the contraption?
It was 1974, not 1976.
Oh, fuck that.
And he crashed.
Question.
He didn't make it. He didn't successfully jump. He nearly drowned. His parachute opened early, and he plummeted to the bottom, and he would have drowned if he would have landed in the water.
So you just read me three paragraphs worth of information.
And it was all...
Two words.
No, it was false.
Two words were false.
Bullshit. Sorry. Okay. You're down one.
I'm down one.
Glenn, you attended the... Glenn.
Yeah.
Down to earth, Glenn. You attended the Juilliard School.
Yeah.
All of the following actors also attended Juilliard.
That's bullshit.
Viola Davis, Kevin Klein.
True, true.
Laura Linney.
True.
And Ving Rhames.
True.
Well,
so
all
for
true.
Reals. For reals,
for reals
is the answer.
For reals.
Glenn, you're correct, sir. Yes. Give it up for Glenn.
Yeah.
He's got, you're up one. Okay.
I'm up one,
Rob. This game's rigged.
This one's a two-parter, Rob. Two-parter.
Oh, good.
You created a show called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That's
yeah. where you come in.
I got that. That's for reals.
I'm taking.
All right. You got part one, right?
Yep.
On average, the warmest month in Philadelphia is July.
Ooh, that's a good one.
For reals or bullshit?
I'm
going to say
the warmest month on average in Philadelphia is in July.
For reals or bullshit? Rob McElhenney.
I'm going to have to say bullshit. I'm going to have to say I remember August being brutal.
Final answer?
No.
Would you
it's not my final
answer.
You
want to change your answer from bullshit to
I'm going
to
say for real.
You're correct. Yes.
Oh, see?
87 degrees is the average temperature in July in Philly. 1 degree hotter than August. Okay, Glenn Howerton. Here we go. In order to legally be called vodka, a spirit must be made from either potatoes or wheat and distilled at least 3 times.
Bullshit.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
And you're correct. It's bullshit. I made that all up.
Yeah.
There's
I know
no
you
rules
did.
For vodka, really. I mean, there's a lot of rules for scotch, for bourbon. Vodka, it can be basically distilled from anything.
I have a quinoa vodka sitting in my freezer right now in case anyone thought I wasn't a douchebag.
Okay.
Quinoa vodka. First class to Aspen.
Can anyone in the town you grew up
God,
in tell
myself.
You what quinoa is? Anyone?
Anyone in the town I grew up in, can they tell me what quinoa is? Yeah, at this point, yes.
Okay. All right. You've educated them all. All right, Rob. Here we go. I happen to know Rob has an affinity for NASA and space and that sort of thing, right? You're into that.
Sure. I thought, sure. No, yes. You are
yes.
totally into that
yes.
stuff.
All right.
Yes.
So, there is a tradition at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory right out here in California to eat good luck peanuts before critical mission events such as orbital insertions or landings. Good luck peanuts is a tradition they do at JPL. For reals or bullshit?
I'm going to say bullshit. It's good luck, something else.
Final answer?
Yes.
It's for reals.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that sort
yeah.
of.
No,
yeah,
peanuts.
I don't understand this game.
A guy was eating peanuts. There was a Ranger program in the 60s.
I don't
They couldn't get
care.
It going. Finally got it going, and a guy happened
Dan,
to eat peanuts.
You're bringing out the worst in Robbie's.
All right, Rob's
very
upset. Glenn? This is it. This is for the win, even though you've already won.
He's already got the win.
All right, but I'll add a bonus question.
I'm going to really fucking slam it home. Right now. If I can. Okay. I want to really.
This is for the utter humiliation.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, Glenn.
All right.
When your sunny co-star, Charlie Day, hosted Saturday Night Live in November of 2011, the musical guest on the show Maroon 5.
I can't believe these questions.
For reals or bullshit?
I can't believe them.
For reals.
Did you want...
Right, as
you
a bonus, I'm going to let you jump back in, Rob.
Now I'm figuring it
what
out.
What songs did they sing?
This is a,
Maroon
this
5.
Is a conspiracy.
He wants to demoralize you.
He wants to demoralize
I'm still mad
me.
About the pilot.
No, right, my second question could be perceived as difficult, but the other ones were.
Rob, what
the
songs
way
did
he
they
asked
sing?
It.
Most people wouldn't think that Ving Rhames went to Juilliard, but go ahead.
I did. Well, you went to Juilliard.
Yeah, but I... Yeah.
What songs did they sing, Rob? I'll
go
give you a chance
yourself.
To get back. All right, how about a bonus question? This will get you back in at least to get the gift bag as well. Here we go. This is for you, Rob McElhenney. A chance to unembarrass yourself.
Okay.
The comedian, and he's a fellow FFX guy, Louis C.K., once said, everywhere is within walking distance if you have the time. Louis C.K. Did he say that? For reals or bullshit?
These are
I'm
all,
say,
you've got a lot of questions that you can't know. You just have to
I'm
going to
say bullshit. It was Mark Twain.
It is bullshit. It was Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright.
There you go. Yeah, good
guess.
Tonight.
Though.
Yeah,
hey, nice. I like the Mark Twain bit.
Mark Twain, Stephen Wright. Same kind of hair.
By the way, that was back before Louis C.K. Became toxic. that was when Louis was still riding high. Oh, he's back now. He's touring.
Is he doing
no apology tour or something. He's just said, fuck it, man. I'm going for
it. No apologies.
No apologies. Anyway.
Well, Rob's a little competitive.
Rob got heated. Things got really heated there. Anyway, so then finally Caitlin showed up and we had a... This is a little short one here, but this is Caitlin and I talking about a chugging contest.
Oh, she's girl, such a queen.
The girl can drink. Yeah.
Did she beat you?
Let's. Why don't you wait for it? Here it comes.
Many years ago, Caitlin came on Maxim Radio with me,
mm-hmm.
and I'll admit
you.
It, she crushed me in a chugging contest.
Yeah.
Was that on Playboy?
On Maxim Radio.
Oh, Maxim.
On Sirius many years
in
ago.
In a chugging contest? What were you chugging?
Beer.
Beer.
Oh.
And she beat me.
Yeah.
And I talked a ton of shit before we did it.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't think there was any chance. And
she
right.
knows she's the test. You have to have... That's not about gender. That's not about, you know...
Technique.
It's about technique. Yeah. It's all about tech. Can you open your throat?
I've never seen... I can. No, I've never seen a woman chug a beer that quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
That's just kind of how I drink beer.
Yeah.
I wasn't even in competition.
You don't
form.
Even... That's always how it goes down
for you?
That's
how it goes. Beer and white wine, it's too fast. I'll be honest. It's too fast. I drink it too fast. And Rob... Rob lets me know. We talk about this.
We've had talks.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier on the show. Rob was saying he drinks every day now because you're pressuring him.
Pressuring him?
No.
Please,
no,
I'll drink by myself. I don't need you.
Yeah, right.
Dan
just in her presence. In her presence.
I like to have a glass of white wine at night.
You need to drink in order to tolerate each other every single night.
But there is something very comforting about that. You go home and you open a nice bottle of wine. You have a glass of wine. That's
drink.
Or
that's my
polish
off
scotch
the wine.
Polish
off the wine.
Man, what I would do to have a drink with Caitlin Olsen.
With Caitlin Olsen. She's the best. There's going to be one more little part we got about with Rob and bar fights. And I think Rob was probably ready to get into a bar fight. Maybe with me at that point. But I want to quickly tell you about some new products. This is some stuff that you should be drinking, you know, for the holidays. Let me gather myself. Give me one second.
Hey, everybody. This is Ed Kowalczyk from the band Live, and you're listening right now to the second best voice from Pennsylvania.
Okay.
You ready?
It settles me, the guy from Live. I've only seen them about 8 times.
Ah.
Not quite at U2 status.
They're
not at the U2 level, but I did meet Ed. Ed was a guest on this show. If you want to go back into the archives, maybe about 10 episodes ago, Ed Kowalczyk from Live on the same episode as Nathaniel Rateliff. That was a hell of an episode. Yeah, that thing rocked. So anyway, new products. Cece, you an Irish whiskey fan?
It's not my go-to.
Well, what if I told you that I have an Irish whiskey that might blow your mind?
I mean, I'm always up for some whiskey,
Okay. Regardless
of where it's from.
Well, Egan's Irish Whiskey is a brand that was established by the brothers named Henry and Patrick Egan in 1852 in Tullamore, which is probably somewhere near where Bono grew up. So Patrick was the brains behind the operation. Henry was the public face, and he was a very politically active Irishman. He served as the secretary of the Tullamore Land League, which was fighting for Irish independence, leading the charge there. So Egan's just came out with an expression called Centenary. And it's just released expression commemorating 100 years since the passing of Henry Egan, who, again, in addition to being a spirit merchant, was a leading figure in the struggle for an independent Ireland. In fact, in 1887, Henry was involved in the Tullamore Tweed incident. You know that. You know about the Tullamore Tweed incident.
I don't. This sounds intriguing.
Oh, yes. Well, there was an Irish freedom fighter by the name of William O'Brien, and he and some others were imprisoned in jail in Tullamore. And they were political prisoners. And in protest of being held as political prisoners, they refused to wear the official prison garb that they'd been issued. And Henry Egan managed to smuggle in a suit of Irish Blarney tweed for O'Brien to wear in defiance of the authorities, and that became known as the Tullamore Tweed incident. So today, if you buy a bottle of the Centenary, you will also get, and there's only 5,995 bottles of this worldwide. It's $100 a bottle, okay? If you buy it, you also get, it comes with an Irish Tweed coaster.
Oh,
that's pretty cool, right?
I love that that was their protest.
Right.
We're going to dress really well.
We are going to show you up.
Screw you. Wait, no.
Those were more genteel times, I guess. But
Dunn, I'm assuming, is Irish.
Dunn,
right?
Is Irish. Dunn. For the love of sweet sovereign Jesus.
Is there a Dunn tweed tartan?
I don't think so. I have a hat like that. I do. Something. I have a tweed coat.
Is it? So like I'm assuming tweed is like tartan in Scotland where the family has their own pattern. Is that not true?
Why are you trying to stump me this entire show?
I'm not genuinely curious.
Ask me about
curious.
Another Ray Bradbury book. Look at it. I didn't realize Cecilia Betzel was going to come on the show and try to make me look like an idiot. Anyway, let me get back to something I know, including this whiskey. I really like it. It's got floral notes, some honey and apricot on the nose. And then on the palate, you get this like light wafers and almond and ginger and zesty fruits. I think you're going to like it.
It sounds really good. I would love to try it. I think there's only, how many Irish whiskeys are there?
There's probably about 150 now. Back in the end of the 20th century, there are three left, essentially, that were available in America, at least. But the category has bounced back.
Ah.
It was almost obsolete at the end of the 20th century. Anyway, the end of this whiskey, it's got ginger at the end, a little lemon zest, licorice. As I said, it's $100 for a bottle, 46% alcohol. That's 92 proof. You knew that. And again, Egan's Centenary.
That would be a great Christmas gift.
A great gift for the drunken Irishman on your Christmas list or on your holiday list. Or
we all
list,
know
whatever
one.
List, Kwanzaa. But if you're not feeling the whiskey, maybe you're feeling the wine. And I got two wines to tell you about from Bertani. One of my favorite Italian producers. I've got Bertani Amarone Classico 2009. This is a traditional blend of some grapes that are very standard grapes in Italy, 80% Corvina Veronese and 20% Rondinella. This is a wine that was aged 6 years in Slovenian oak barrels.
Slovenian oak.
Yes, none of that. You know, fancy French oak, this Slovenian oak. And then it spent another 12 months in the bottle before they released it. This is just a lot of plum and cherries and then it's got some spiciness to it like you'd get from Amarone. And then a little bit of vanilla in there. A little bit of vanilla.
Vanilla.
A little bit of vanilla. Vodka. all right. It's $130 bucks a bottle. But again, you know, you're worth it. Now, if you want to go on a little bit much more affordable wine from the same producer, we've got Secco Bertani Original Vintage Edition 2015, and this is only $26 a bottle. And
that's more like it.
It's a delicious, it's a blend of Corvina clones, Sangiovese, Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah. It's made from a recipe that's been around for almost 100 years, and it's like a slow fermentation in wood, and it's you get the nuts and the cherries. It's very versatile. It's a food wine. I call it a food wine. And for $26, you can bring that to a party and impress the hell out of people. What do you do when you're going to a holiday party?
I bring Mulholland.
You bring Mulholland. You don't bring wine? Gin? Whiskey?
Gin. Whiskey. Everybody, if you show up to a party with a bottle of whiskey, you are immediately the favorite person there.
I agree. I think you're immediately the favorite person anyway, aren't you?
Why you?
Thanks for
coming
on the
show. But the Mulholland is really great, and it's very low priced at Whole Foods. The gin is $26.99, whiskey is $28.99, and the vodka is $17.99.
I feel like you just hijacked my new products segment. Look at that. Look at you.
Just throwing it out there.
Hey, Walton Goggins, give this woman a raise. She has hijacked the segment. You just inserted Mulholland. All right, I'll take it. And then the final product in our new products segment is Baker's Bourbon. Okay, now Baker's has been around for a while. It's part of the original small batch bourbon collection that the late, great Booker No, the master distiller Jim Beam, created that. But so it's been around for a long time, but now they've sort of rebranded it. They got a new bottle design that's got all the like handwritten the age of the warehouse it was in and all that. But they just debuted their Baker's first ever limited time offering. It's a 13-year-old single barrel bourbon that I just think cranks it up a little bit. If you like, it's the same thing, 107 proof, which is what Baker's always is, but and minimum 7-year age statement, but it just that little extra time in that barrel just gives it that richer, fuller, oaky, toasted nut flavor.
And
if you're gonna give it out as a gift, it comes in a gift box, metallic inspired label. It's got a metal neck charm on it. It's in limited quantities, but I think you can find it. It's $99.99 a bottle. Not 100.
I was gonna say,
because I think they got you fooled. You're like, well, at least it's not 100. It's $99.99. Yeah.
Speaking of Jim Beam, I think that was the first drink or first sip of alcohol I ever had was Jim Beam.
How old were you?
Like 13 or something. I mean, I'd had wine and beer because you know.
Well, you grew up in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's different.
Well, when we went skiing, I would drink. My mom would give me orange juice with Campari.
Who wouldn't?
It's actually really delicious.
I'm sure my parents would have done that if we could afford to ski, but we could not.
Oh, God, I sound so bougie.
No, what we used to do when we were kids.
When we holidayed
in Vienna. But I grew up kind of poor in Philly, but what they would do, I remember this with the adults, and not, I don't remember them doing it with me, but I'm sure they did, is if the baby was cranky, they'd say, you put a little whiskey on their gums.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine doing that now. They'd be like hauling you off.
My stepmom's Scottish and they,
put some whiskey on the kid's gums. Can you imagine being at a party right now, pull out a whiskey and you see somebody putting it in a baby. They'd be like, all right, let's call Child Protective Services right now.
But yeah, Jim Beam will always have a soft spot in my heart. It's what my dad had in our basement. And therefore, that is what I drink.
It's great stuff. You're just adding all kinds of stuff in here. What else you got? Well, that was Baker's, but yeah. Any other products you want to add to the new products? You working with any other brands?
Nope.
All right.
I'll show that though.
No, I appreciate you. Hey, you're just adding to the show, and that's what I appreciate.
What
that.
Else would I do?
I appreciate your enthusiasm for the audience.
Yeah, you know.
Keep them in the know about things.
What was the, here's a fun one. What was the first cocktail you ever ordered at a bar?
Tom Collins.
Tom Collins.
Because it's the only.
What even is it?
It's the only name that I knew. It's a gin cocktail, and it's the only name of a drink that I knew because my dad used to say that I'd hear him say it. And so I think I went to the bar with like three friends. We were like 16. We had fake ID and we're all like, bartender's like, what do you want? We're all like, we didn't know. And we're all like, Tom Collins?
My
buddy.
Tom Collins.
Buddy next to me is like, Tom Collins? Yeah, I'll have a Tom Collins. Tom Collins.
The bartender's probably like, who the hell are these
four Tom
kids
Collins, in? Please.
Yeah, mine was actually Sex on the Beach.
Oh,
I was 14.
Brussels. No, that's just
sex
wrong.
On the beach. I know.
That's
we're such
just
children.
Wrong. Wow.
So yeah, we're all
at least Tom Collins is a respectable cocktail. Sex on the Beach, that says a lot. That says a lot about it. Well, when you're 14 though, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
14's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to hear one more little bit from the Sunny Guys before we tap dance off into the sunset here?
Ooh.
This is Rob, as you know, Rob got a little ornery the whole time, but here's Rob talking about bar fights.
Rob went through a phase where he wouldn't sometimes
never mind. There we go.
Oh, what was that?
That was a...
Dun, 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 dun,
okay.
Dun, dun. So, that was us tap dancing out of here.
So, yeah, that's so funny. All right, so when I did these clips, there's when I'm editing them, there's a metronome feature in my editing software, and I have to turn it off, and I must have forgotten to do it. Let's hear.
Rob went through a phase where he wouldn't sometimes
cool,
come
right?
out with me.
Yeah, it sounds like all of a sudden it's a rap.
Because he didn't like going to bars and clubs. Because he always felt the urge to fight people.
That, no,
yeah.
That's not. Yeah, that's not.
No, okay,
turn this into
okay,
a song.
Let me add. That's not ridiculous. Let me add a little nuance to this. I think maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe it was because he always felt afraid that someone was going to fight him. Not that he was afraid of a fight, but he didn't want it.
Anyway. It was fascinating. If only you could hear it. It was very fascinating.
One day we will
know
what Rob said about bar fights. Have you ever been in a bar fight?
Yeah, I've been in a lot of bar fights. Kick
you're
ass.
From Philly.
Did I mention that I grew up poor in Philadelphia? It was a requirement. It's not just a rite of passage. It was a rite of passage every week. You had a rite of passage. You had to get in a fight. But not anymore. I've mellowed with my... as I become a man of a certain age, I've mellowed. But anyway, I want to, what else do I want to, I think that's kind of, might be it. When the music comes on.
What the hell is this?
It ain't over till the skinny lady sings, and here it is right here, yeah. This is our closing music. You like it?
Still a child.
Yeah, see, we're mixing it up. Anyway,
happening?
I want to, first of all, I want to thank Cecilia Betzel.
Thanks so much for having me on again.
Mulholland.
Always a pleasure.
Mulholland Distilling. Check it. If you're in California, get it. If you're not in California, it's coming your way soon. I want to thank Rob, Caitlin, and Glenn, obviously. Go, if you're a Sunny fan, or if you're not a Sunny fan, pick up a copy of The Seven Secrets of Awakening, the highly effective four-hour giant, today. I want to, again, say a fond farewell to my old dear friend, Gary Regan. Gary, miss you, buddy. Wherever you are, I know you're probably having more fun than any of us. And I will leave you with a quote from Roy Blunt Jr. A good heavy book holds you down. It's an anchor that keeps you from getting up and having another gin and tonic.